8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Thursday, November 4th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
Students at Queensbury High School are responding to ongoing bullying and racial taunts by talking to each other, first in small groups and recently in larger meetings. Administrators say the result has been more compassion and empathy among students and staff.
What I can tell you honestly came out of it that was absolutely amazing was the level of empathy and compassion that our students have and that they really want to be able to move forward with supporting one another.
Celia Clark talks with Queensbury's social emotional learning director.
Also coming up, more reaction to Tuesday's election. Republicans and conservatives are claiming victory in the rejection of three ballot proposals that would have meant voting reforms.
People of all party affiliations voted to keep fair and honest elections in this state.
But supporters of the failed measures wish Democratic leaders had pushed harder for them.
This is a telling moment for us. We need to work harder and smarter, and it's an unfortunate shared loss.
Also on the show, a conversation with Night Owl Boonville artist Greg Fedchuk, whose work is on display now at the Remington in Ogdensburg. All of that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light is supported by Cronin's Golf Resort, offering golfers the experience to enjoy the fall foliage. Details at croninsgolfresort.com and the Adirondack Explorer magazine and Adirondack Almanac, providing regional news and commentary. Also available online at adirondackexplorer.org and adirondackalmanac.com.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. In Warren County, Queensbury High School students staged a walkout in late September. They weren't protesting a single specific incident, but rather ongoing bullying, racial taunts, and harassment. And school administrators responded by listening.
Over several days in October, school leaders met first with small groups and at the end of the month in two larger summits. In total, about 100 students participated. Rachel Marcil heads up the district's social-emotional learning. That means she's working on building compassion, empathy, and kindness among students and staff. And she spoke with Celia Clark.
How did you all decide that after the protest, what you wanted to do was to sit down and talk to students? What was that process?
Well, we as an administrative team, you know, got together. We always do and reflect when, you know, any situations come up, such as the protest. And, you know, we talked about how we wanted to be able to listen to our students and hear what they needed, you know, to tell us. So from there, we kind of came up with our next steps, which led to, you know, our roundtables in which we talked with our students and then ultimately with the summits that we recently held.
So when it comes to the roundtables and the diversity summit, tell me, what did you hear from students?
When we met with the students, I would say they were pretty open and honest with us about, you know, different ways they were feeling, whether they had been discriminated against directly or they had had a friend who maybe had been or they had overheard different things. But what I can tell you honestly came out of it that was absolutely amazing was the level of empathy and compassion that our students have and that they really want to be able to move forward with supporting one another.
As you were listening to the students, how did what you were hearing make you feel? How did you feel in the moment?
I mean, I would say I had, you know, some feelings of sadness for sure. You never want to hear as a school administrator that any student in your building doesn't feel accepted or, you know, is feeling like they're being discriminated against. You certainly never want to hear that. So for sure, I definitely felt, you know, sadness that that was occurring for them. But at the same time, again, I go back to this feeling of hope I was really left with as I listened to students support one another and the things they wanted to see, you know, the education of students and the education of teachers and working together, you know, to, you know, correct kind of the things that had been going wrong, you know, really gave me this sense of hope that this generation really truly cares for one another and wants to change how things are.
Can you say a little bit more about what their vision, what they described?
You know, they would bring up discipline and wanting to make sure students were disciplined if they discriminated against students in any way. But the piece they really wanted was not just discipline. They wanted education. They really wanted more of a restorative approach to why what you're saying is wrong or why it is hurtful. And an education on basically how to do better and to know that, you know, there's certain things that you should just not say to people.
And did you hear different things from students of color and white students?
So I definitely heard, you know, students of color who were, you know, reflecting on feelings and, you know, actions and things that had occurred based on discrimination. But you definitely had white students who had themselves maybe experienced or were, you know, bystanders or overheard something.
Were you hearing the same things from students of color as you were hearing from white students about solutions?
I would say yes. All of the students were really united in this common purpose of moving forward with education amongst all of the student body, also wanting, you know, teachers, administrators, everybody to move forward with education in the realm of empathy and compassion, not just wanting people disciplined, because they know at the end of the day, you know, whether it's an in-school suspension, an out-of-school suspension, that doesn't necessarily change someone's actions or behavior. What changes that is education.
And so what's next?
Yeah, we're actually going to plan some additional summits. It looks like hopefully in November. One of the things that came out of the summits was the students really liked that, and they actually felt, you know, can we have more of these? And some student ambassadors and student leaders really emerged from the summits as well. So we're looking to partner with them and have them potentially assist in leading our next summit.
That was Rachel Marsil, the Queensbury School District's Social Emotional Learning Director. She spoke with Celia Clark.
Listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past eight. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, Boonville artist Greg Fedchuk works through the night on his abstract paintings. His work is on display now at the Remington in Ogdensburg. And we'll hear part one of our conversation with him coming up in just a couple of minutes. Then this afternoon, join us for String Fever with your host, Barb Heller, for songs about home, songs about traveling home and family reunions. This is the time of year when we're looking ahead to planning for the holidays. So tune in for an earful of songs about it with Barb Heller this afternoon on String Fever between 3 and 5, right here on NCPR.
Some string music featuring Dan Berggren of Ballston Spa. Northern Light is supported by Gray & Gray & Associates, CPAs, a proactive accounting and financial services firm in Northern New York with offices in Canton and Messina, graycpas.com, and by Renew Architecture and Design, offering custom design services from the St. Lawrence River Valley to the Adirondacks. More at renewarchitecture.com.
Former St. Regis Mohawk Tribal Chief Paul Thompson died this week. Thompson served 4 terms as tribal chief. He was instrumental in resolving a 3-decades-long land claim lawsuit that ultimately allowed Mohawks to add land to the Akwesasne Reservation. He also spearheaded the construction and licensing of the Akwesasne Mohawk Casino Resort and negotiated with the state to allow Mohawks exclusive gaming rights in the North Country. Before running for office, Thompson was like many Mohawk men. He was an iron worker and member of the local union, Iron Workers Local 440, for more than 50 years. The tribal flag at the Tribal Administration Building will be lowered until the day after his funeral.
Local businesses looking to sell their products overseas can get help expanding from the federal government. The U.S. Export-Import Bank is a little-known government agency that provides financial services to American firms doing business abroad. The bank's Northeast Regional Manager, Richard Foy, told a recent Chamber of Commerce seminar, although the EXIM Bank, as it's known, often works with major U.S. corporations like Boeing, most of their partners are small companies.
It's commonly misunderstood that EXIM Bank is only supporting large companies. In fact, most of our authorizations, over 90%, are for small business. When I say authorization, that's a particular transaction. On the dollar side, we authorized in 2019 over $2 billion in support for small business. So we very much have an emphasis on small business.
Foy says banks can provide working capital loans to help fill major orders and low-risk guaranteed lines of credit for foreign buyers. You'll find more information at exim.org.
Republicans and conservatives are claiming victory in the rejection of three ballot proposals on Tuesday. The amendments to the state constitution would have changed the redistricting process and allowed for mail-in voting same-day voter registration in New York. Supporters of the failed measures say they wish Democratic elected officials had pushed harder for the measures. From Albany, Karen DeWitt has more.
State GOP Party Chair Nick Langworthy and other Republican leaders traveled the state in the weeks leading up to the election to speak against the ballot measures. They distributed lawn signs urging a no vote, and the state's conservative party ran television ads. Langworthy, who held 40 news conferences to urge voters to reject the measures, spoke outside the state Capitol building, where he said Democrats overreached and voters responded with common sense.
All three resoundingly defeated. And it's because people, you know, not just Republicans or conservative voters, people of all party affiliations voted to keep fair and honest elections in this state.
Langworthy says in addition to the defeat of the ballot measures, there were significant wins by Republican candidates on Long Island, including for county executive and district attorney in Nassau County and in the district attorney's race in Suffolk County. He says the outcomes are a referendum on the performance of President Joe Biden and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And he says the victories help set the table for Republican wins in next year's statewide races, including the contest for governor. He likens 2022 to the mid-1990s when GOP candidate George Pataki beat former governor Mario Cuomo.
And build the best ticket that our party has run since 1994. And in next year, we're going to take that building back. And we are going to elect a Republican governor.
Government reform groups who back the measures say they are deeply disappointed with the outcome. Sarah Goff is with Common Cause.
This is a black eye for democracy and voting rights in New York.
Goff says what's puzzling about the defeat is that when surveyed, most voters want to be able to vote by mail, and they also support same-day voter registration, practices that are in effect in many other states. She also believes national political forces influence the vote. Goff says former President Donald Trump's unsubstantiated claims about voter fraud and stolen elections has permeated the nation's culture, even in blue New York.
It was very clear that Republicans and conservatives just pulled down the national messaging on this issue, which, again, is misinformation, disinformation. The other side is not playing with facts or reality, nor are they presenting fair arguments about what would have happened if what 3 and 4 passed.
Democrats who lead the legislature approved the ballot measures. Governor Kathy Hochul was lieutenant governor when they passed. But the governor and legislative leaders did little to promote the measures. Goff, with Common Cause, says backers of expanded voting will have to do better next time.
This is a telling moment for us in that we need to work harder and smarter And it's an unfortunate shared loss.
Langworthy says he was also surprised that the Democratic leaders did not advocate more strongly for the measures. And he says perhaps they were silent because they knew they were flawed.
The people used common sense and said, these are solutions to problems that don't exist in this state. We're going to reject it.
If Democratic lawmakers want to try again to allow the voter expansion and alter the redistricting process, they will have to wait a while. The rules on changing the state's constitution require approval by two consecutively elected state legislatures, so the measures could not reappear on the ballot again until at least 2023. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
To Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, abstract painter Greg Fedchuk often works with natural materials, tea, sand, and oregano. And we'll hear part one of our conversation with him in just a minute. After that, stick around for Bird Note just ahead at 8:42. But first, we're not taking a look at the weather. I've got a sound quiz for you, Todd.
Hey, what? Wait, me?
Yeah, wake up. Sleep at the wheel here, Todd. Come on. So this is some sound. So for context, the sound quiz, oftentimes Todd or I will gather sound and we won't tell each other what it is and we'll play it on the air. We haven't heard it before. Well, I've heard it before, but we'll play it and see if the other can guess it. And this is actually sound sent in from a listener, Ann Finney of Moose River Farm in Old Fort. Okay, see if you can guess it.
You want me to guess?
Yeah, can you guess it? It's kind of creepy, right?
Well, it sounds like my dog when his dinner is late, but I don't think that's it.
You are on the right track, though, Todd. You are on the right track.
Canine.
Yes, right. Yes. We've got another cut.
Oh, I know this.
Yes.
These sound like coyotes.
Coyotes. Uh-huh, you got uh-huh, it. Uh-huh. So Ann Finney had sent in this sound actually to Doyle Dean, host of the Dean's List, and said that they came to her driveway one night and their surveillance camera picked up the howling, and just sort of the good time these coyotes were having in their driveway. I just wanted to send it in. Ann, thank you so much for doing that. And so this gave me a little bit of inspiration. I'm going to put out a challenge to other listeners to try to stump Todd Moe. So send me an email with clips of sound from your world, and you just might hear him on the air in a sound quiz. Oh, Todd, are you sitting there in a huff? Are you pouting?
No, I'm waiting for the challenge. It's like I double, triple dare you to try to stump me with your sound.
Yeah, hit Todd with your best shot.
Yeah.
Well, you can use the recording app on your phone, or if you've got a Samsung, use Samsung voice recorder for Androids. For iPhones, it's voice memo, and email those clips to monica@ncpr.org, not news@ncpr.org. Otherwise, Todd will see them too. Send them to monica@ncpr.org, and you just might hear them on the air. And thank you in advance.
And it's a really simple thing to do, you know?
Super simple.
Yeah,
my goodness,
I mean,
yes.
You probably have a smartphone or some sort of digital device. As Monica said, just record it. And it doesn't have to be perfect, all right? Doesn't have to be perfect.
Right, that was surveillance camera audio, and we could tell what it was.
And Monica can tweak it, so, you know, if it needs a little bit of this and that. So don't be shy. Come on, we want to hear from you. Seriously, we want to, like, reach out and what are some sounds? And go ahead, try to stump me. I dare you, you know?
And, triple dog dare.
All right, triple coyote dare. Right, okay. It's 8:20, and Northern Light is supported by Rickard Environmental Associates, a woman-owned and operated engineering firm in Keene, New York, assisting companies in maintaining environmental compliance. Learn more at rickardenvironmental.com, and St. Joseph's new open access center on Old Lake Colby Road in Saranac Lake, providing answers for you or a loved one and helping to start the path to recovery. stjoestreatment.org. Oh, occasionally some rather ominous-looking clouds out there today, partly cloudy skies, and temperatures today in the 30s in some of the higher elevations, 40s elsewhere, so places like the Tri-Lakes, the High Peaks, the Tug Hill, probably highs upper 30s, elsewhere 40s, winds out of the south-southwest. Then clear tonight, tomorrow and Saturday at this point, partly to mostly sunny skies and highs in the 40s, 29 degrees right now in Canton. Monica, back to you.
Yes, well, I want to introduce everyone to Boonville artist Greg Fedchuk. He's an abstract painter whose work is currently on display in a retrospective exhibit at the Remington Museum in Ogdensburg. And when you see his paintings, they're kind of harsh. His subject matter is often things he's frustrated with, like talking heads on TV, these accusations of fake news, or our inundation with advertisements on our phones and the internet. And we'll hear more about his relationship with his work tomorrow, but for now we'll hear from him about his process. And so I called him up around 10 a.m. earlier this week.
Today, this is my bedtime, actually. I sleep during the day and work at night.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I usually go to bed about 10 a.m.
Oh, well, thank you for being willing to talk with me right now as you're about to nod off.
Well, it's not bad. It's like New Year's Eve, you know?
And so you do most of your painting at night then?
Yeah, a common time would be 3 a.m., 4 a.m., sometimes even 5 or 6 a.m.
There is something so special about working in the middle of the night, I think,
yes.
Too.
Yeah,
what is that like for you?
I've read often about jazz musicians who will do their best playing after the small club or the bar or wherever they are, the venue has closed for the night, and they'll often play beyond 2 or 3 a.m. with their friends just to jam. And that's when they claim they do some of their best work, is when nobody's listening and it's 3, 4, or 5 a.m. We also live in the country. We have state forest on three sides of us. And across the road is the Black River Environmental Improvement Association. So we're totally isolated out here. So not only is it quiet, it's deadly quiet. And it's great to work at 3 a.m. Yep.
And you often use natural materials. I'm thinking of your piece, Withdrawing Projections, where you used...
Withdrawing Projection is the one that has a lot of tannic acid in it from really strongly brewed tea. I will take, for that one, I don't know that I think I've used tea in a couple of others and it didn't turn out as well. But I would dump like 20, 40 tea bags into a hot, Revere copper bottom pot and steep it until it's almost black, and then use that as my paint or my drip. And there might even be some tea leaves proper from bags that I broke open in that painting. And honest to God, you'd think it wouldn't be that simple, but a painting will look more organic if you use something like sand or soil or tea. I think some paintings have oregano. Some paintings have clover seed. Some paintings have grass seed. I was actually concerned that the ones with seed in them would attract rodents because we have plenty of them up here and down here in the wilderness. I think the tea in Withdrawing Projections helps give it one of the most organic looks of any of my paintings.
Yes, this one in particular does have a really sandy look to it, or almost looks like the surface of a planet with these grooves in the bottom right-hand corner that sort of have reds to them and lighter, mm-hmm. almost sort of vein-like lines and almost cement and stony-like sort of look of the backdrop to it.
A lot of modern art and abstract art in particular seems to look like shots out of a telescope or of the, you know, planets or moons. I don't know why that is. It probably is because these are some of the most fantastic things you and I see on a daily basis.
Yeah, I do wonder why that is. I guess when I've had friends that paint abstractions, mm-hmm. theirs maybe have turned out more floral,
mm-hmm.
and that could
Minor.
Also be from who they are.
Yeah. Mine tend to be, I think, fairly violent or vigorous looking.
Yes, I think so too.
And like they're worked really hard, and quite often I'll be exhausted after painting. I'll be surprised at how much physical work it is.
Yes, and the colors too, I mean, are often reds and blacks and grays and browns, and the strokes are not gentle.
Some of them are painfully harsh.
Yes. Can you share a bit more about that?
It's not done on purpose. That's just the way I paint. I think it allows the work to be stronger and more attention-getting and more vigorous simply because that's the way I apply the materials. I think it's easier for people to realize that there's more going on in an abstract painting than simply spilled paint.
We'll hear more about Greg Fedchuk's exhaustive, intense relationship that he can have with his work tomorrow. His work is currently on display at the Remington Museum in Ogdensburg, and you can find his examples of his work at our website, ncpr.org, later this morning. Listening to a little bit of music from the Boston-based band Billy Wilder. They've performed throughout the North Country this summer and fall in Burlington, Saranac Lake, and Upper Jay. And tonight, you can check them out at the Park Theater in Glens Falls. This is the song Sahara by the group Billy Wilder. Again, they're performing this evening at the Park Theater in Glens Falls. That's our show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a couple of minutes. After that, stick around for the Marketplace Morning Report coming up between 8:51 and 9 o'clock. Energy prices around the world are jumping and demand increases. and supply can't keep up. We'll hear a bit more on that conversation coming up, and we'll get caught up in all the morning's business news just ahead at 8:51.
Big thanks to the team that puts Northern Light together, Celia Clark and Amy Fireisel, Ryan Finnerty, Emily Russell, David Summerstein, Monica Sandresky, and
Todd Moe, our intern, Claire Gaelic, and you, dear listener, your support of the station, but also your ideas and your audio for sound quizzes for Todd. Don't forget to email me, monica@ncpr.org. We can stump him. I have no doubts about it.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandresky. Have a good one.